sitting at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Right.
Well,
peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression.
Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at Channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at Channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and with me today is my co-host Crystal Giesbrecht and our special guest Bridget Keating, author and PhD student at the University of Regina. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
It's really nice to have you here, Bridget.
And it's my pleasure.
We're basically going to be discussing some things about Mexico.
Yes.
And you traveled there recently.
Yes, I went in September. I arrived September 30th, and I was there for my PhD research.
So maybe before we get into what was going on down there in Mexico, maybe you can just tell us briefly what you're researching.
Okay. What I am doing is I'm looking at the representation, the mediated representation of La Comandanta Ramona from the Zapatista Resistance Movement. If you don't know what the Zapatista Resistance Movement is or was, in 1994, in response to the passage of NAFTA, the passing of NAFTA, passing sounds like a death, but the passage of NAFTA, indigenous Maya people in Chiapas rose up and in resistance against the amendments to Article 27 in particular, which threatens or put in jeopardy the ejidal land base, the communal land base. And that was considered for indigenous peoples in Mexico a death sentence.
That's fascinating. And we, with our amnesty work, I think we talk quite a bit about NAFTA and the impacts that that had on indigenous rights and really just human rights in general across Canada and the U.S. and Mexico. And this also Yes. ties into the next thing we're going to talk about, because there's been sort of an uprising in Mexico since with the disappeared students. So maybe you can tell us a little bit of the background of what happened after you arrived.
Well, it was interesting because I arrived on the 30th, and a few days later I received an email indicating that 43 students had been disappeared from the state of Guerrero. And I remember thinking, what will be the response to this? Will there be silence? There have been so many disappearances, so many mass murders, mass slaughters, slaughter rather. What will happen in response to this? And within a few days, the protest started. And the student movement started, and it was nationwide. So in response to the murder of 43 indigenous students from the Ayotzinapa Normal School, it sparked this massive protests across the country that really, those types of protests and collective gatherings, the country hadn't seen since the revolution in 1910.
That's amazing. And so I know that there's really no why to such a grotesque human rights violation, but just for the people that are listening that don't know the background of the story, why did this tragedy happen with the one student being found tortured and murdered and then the 43 who were disappeared?
Yeah, the narrative of the story is really complicated. It's very difficult to make sense of it, especially if you don't have an understanding of Mexican history or politics or the socio-cultural dynamics of the country. It's confounding, I think. But where I would start is with the Ayotzinapa Rural School and what that is. This is a school where indigenous students become teachers, and those students go out and they educate other poor indigenous campesino students in regions throughout Mexico. That school in particular, and the normal schools, evolved as a result of demands from the 1910 revolution that were promised in the 1917 Mexican Revolution, the education of indigenous peoples. The Ayotzinapa normal school, rather, is considered a radical school. It is associated with leftist activities, and because of that, those activities and that history and that background, it really is a threat to the power structure in Mexico and the elite power structure, I should say.
Right.
But just to go back, the indigenous students that night, the night of September 26th when they were disappeared, what happened was they had taken buses out on the highway, and they were going to interrupt or intercept vehicles on the highway and solicit funds in order to go to Mexico City for the October 2nd commemoration of the Tlatelolco student massacre, which happened in 1968. There are a lot of strands to this story.
Yeah. A lot more than I was aware of when you get your bits and pieces from the news. So I think that this is just really helpful background.
Yes. So those students were taking buses out, and they were going to impede vehicles on the highway, solicit money. But what was happening that night was in the town of Iguala, the mayor's wife, the mayor of Iguala, his wife was giving a presentation, a talk, and this would have disrupted her talk. So the mayor instructed the police, the municipal police, but also the federal police were involved, to intercept these students, to go and, quote, teach the students a lesson. And what happened was there was a bus of soccer players who were on the highway, and the police opened fire on this bus. Several students were shot, and then the police realized, oh, we've got this is the wrong bus. These are the wrong students.
Oops.
Yes.
Gee.
Following that, the students in the first bus came, and then the police opened fire on them. At the time, 6 students were killed, 43 were disappeared. The entire event took about 3 hours, and there were various points, geographic locations involved. A team of researchers from Berkeley determined that this was a highly orchestrated, premeditated attack upon the students. Now, the next day, the very next day, the first student was found. His eyes had been removed, had been pulled out, and his face had been cut off. So it was a strong message. You are faceless. You have no importance here. Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
And this, of course, relates back to the students' activism and that history of activism, that history of questioning authority in that school. And I should just mention that the school is the birthplace, not really the birthplace, but the revolutionary Luciano Cabañas came from that school. He's considered one of the revolutionaries in Mexico who was also a school teacher.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yes. I didn't know about all of these connections with the story. So this really puts it together for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is stuff that we just do not hear about here in Canada. It's funny that the study of history depends who's writing it, doesn't it? Just to draw a little bit of a parallel, the history that we, as my age group, learned about our own country, about North America, is very different now than what we learned, you know.
Yes.
And I think Mexico is the same thing, only more so. Wow, this is just incredible.
That's a good point. And how you mention history in Canada, and we're talking largely about the history of Indigenous peoples,
mm-hmm.
and
this
the same thing in Mexico. And what I wanted to ask you, Bridget, was, the students that were disappeared and were the victims were Indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
Who is getting involved in these protests in Mexico? Has it been largely Indigenous people? Has it been students? Is it everyone?
This is a grassroots movement. It is organized to a certain extent in the way grassroots movements are organized. It is largely a student movement, mm-hmm. and a continuum of the student movement from 1968. And let me just go back to 1968 to provide a bit of historical context. In 1968, students in Mexico were demanding the release of political prisoners, freedom of the press. They were fighting against President Ordaz's, I guess, repressive measures in the country. And this is all taking place in September, early part of October, just days before Mexico was to host the 1968 Olympics. So this was blemishing the country. This was a blight for the government, for the federal government. And what Ordaz did, he stepped in and he said, okay, military, you know, take action against these students, silence them. And on October 2nd in 1968, the students were gathered in Tlatelolco Square, and there were snipers up above, and they just opened fire on the students. Those records, those military records, have never been released. The number of students killed that day, that night, nobody knows for sure, because students were disappeared. Their bodies were never found. And so this, what is happening right now, is a continuum of that.
Wow.
So largely when we talk about Ayotzinapa, we have students from all over the country, with the nucleus being at UNAM, the autonomous university in Mexico City, considered the most radical, university in Mexico. And in fact, while I was there and working at the library there, the police went onto the campus and shot 2 students. because the police were constantly trying to provoke the students. They were trying to provoke the students. They wanted a reaction to justify a heavy-handed response. So you have police going onto campus on a Saturday, shooting students. They would shut down, the police would shut down the metro so students from UNAM could not access the center of the city. Yes.
Wow.
So what was that like for you being there researching in the library when this was taking place?
Well, the first, I remember the first protest, I was on the metro, and because I went to several protests. Students were protesting every day. It wasn't just once in a while. Pardon me. The protests were ongoing, constant. So the first protest I saw, I was on the metro, and the students were protesting outside. And everyone in the metro just became silent. And they started talking. And they said, meaning the government, they're attacking the campesinos. They're attacking the students. You know, we need help. We need to fight this. And so that was the first protest I saw. And then after that, I was at the AGN, which is the National Archives. I was leaving one day, but I couldn't exit. I couldn't leave the grounds because there were protesters walking by. And so the police had shut off access to the AGN. And I mean, the police at the AGN carry guns. They carry
automatic weapons.
Automatic weapons. And so they had shut down the AGN. I was not allowed to leave, and the students were protesting. That was the second time. Every day at the UNAM, at La UNAM, there were protests. So what was it like for me? It was incredible to see the spirit of resistance, to see students standing up and saying, you know, I could be harmed, I could be arrested, I could be detained, and certainly students were, and they would not back down. They did not back down.
It's incredible. And so you said on the metro people got mm-hmm. silent and they all started talking. So this, mm-hmm. it's not just affecting students or the people kind of directly involved in that movement, but does the average Mexican citizen, you know, your middle-class person living in Mexico City, are they getting involved in this?
It's such a good question. I could see, you know, the campesinos would come to the protest, people from in Mexico City, I'm talking about, because mm-hmm. there were protests everywhere. But the protests I went to, I saw campesinos. I saw working class people. I saw people from, you know, the upper class as well. Stating that, not everybody supported the students mm-hmm. and supported the movements. In fact, the students were criminalized. The students were blamed for their own deaths, which is a common pattern in Mexico mm-hmm. when somebody is murdered. Well, they must have done something. They are not good Mexicans. It is a common pattern. So not everybody supported the students. The students were vilified. There were editorials written calling, using derogatory language to mark mm-hmm. the protesters and say, you know, you are trying to destabilize the country. How dare you do this? And the fact is, there wasn't a problem, and I'm using air quotes, in mm-hmm. Mexico until there were protests. Right. And it was at the point where there were protests that you had this incredible resistance and by the government and the government wanting to heavily repress the protesters, which leads me to something else. On November 20th, the day of the revolution, this is a big national holiday in Mexico, which also marked a huge protest. I remember seeing military vehicles driving in the city. And in the back of those vehicles, which were open so you could see the soldiers, mm-hmm. in the back of those vehicles, I could see young men dressed all in black. Those men were part of the anarchists who were planted mm-hmm. within the protest to create and to provoke.
Provocateur.
Yes.
So do you think that they were military? Mm-hmm. They were military. They came with the military, and then they jumped in and played that role.
Absolutely. And in fact, at another protest I went to on December 6th, I saw when the riot police were coming out, 4,000 riot police at least. None of them had any badge numbers. There was video taken of the police saying, of the riot police saying, you know, don't get that guy. He's a compañero. He's a brother. He's one of ours.
Right.
So they were planted to provoke.
Wow.
And also to twist and skew the public perception of those protests. Well, look, these protesters are violent, which was not the case.
And we did see some of that, and I think here in Canada, and again, I should say maybe in the English-speaking media too, because that's where we're getting our information, it's very supportive of and sympathetic to the students and the protesters. But we did see a lot of the stuff, you know, fires being started and violence breaking out, and you do have that reaction of, okay, you understand the hurt and the anger, right. But is this going to make things better? And you feel like, oh, I think we're going backwards. But now that I've heard your side from being down there, do you think that violence and that negativity that occurred was planted?
It was planted. It came mm-hmm. from one specific group. I saw that they're called the Black Bloc or the anarchists, and mm-hmm. easily identifiable. You know, I saw the students go and start breaking windows of mm-hmm. Starbucks. And, you know, this was a very, very specific group of students. And they were the students who, and this is, you know, this information is out there. It's not just me saying it.
Mm-hmm.
But these students were brought in. They were paid.
It kind of makes me, it reminds me a little bit of the G20 in Toronto, where you wonder whether some of these tactics were employed by our own government, you know,
like,
I don't feel like we here in Canada are apart from all this. To me, I see sort of echoes of the same sort of thing happening, and mm-hmm. you know, as time goes on, it's not getting better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are interconnected. We have NAFTA. We have an economic agreement with mm-hmm. Mexico. There are Canadian companies going into Mexico
right.
and extracting resources
yeah.
and not consulting with Indigenous peoples and regions.
Exactly.
In fact, when I was in Chiapas, I spoke with a Canadian oil executive who was in a bookstore and said, I just found out that I learned about the Zapatista resistance movement. I had no idea it even existed.
How can you be working in Chiapas and not be aware?
Yes. So these officials or these executives or, you know, they're going into the region with without knowledge of the history, peoples, etc. You know, and it's
yeah, and clearly no free prior and informed consent, because had they spoke to the people of the region, mm-hmm. they would have known the mm-hmm. history, and they would have known some of the local people's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And this was after 3 weeks he had been there.
Hmm. Yeah.
It just sounds to me like there's a huge disconnect between government and, like, indigenous people in particular, but I'm sure the poorer classes, that sort of thing, people who aren't well off, they can't depend on support of the government.
Well, this can be traced back to Spanish conquest in mm-hmm. the 16th century. You know, this is an ongoing problem. The divisions, the stratification are incredibly profound, and there is an invisibility and a facelessness of Indigenous peoples in Mexico. But there's also resistance, and there's mm-hmm. also dissent.
So there, would there be in evidence a feeling that some people at the top realize the injustice that's going on and are trying to make a difference? Is there any of that in evidence there?
I don't know if I can answer that. I can tell you that the president, Peña Nieto, who is not popular right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, as as part of those protests, the protesters weren't just calling for the return of the students, because the students haven't been found yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have not been found. In looking for the students, searchers have, you know, found mass graves, numerous mass graves.
That was one of the most horrifying things, is when the mass grave was found really early on, and everyone said it must be the students. And it wasn't. Who are these victims?
Yes.
And there's been so many, but then there's been so many enforced disappearances in Mexico. How do you even begin to match up the victims of the disappearances and these bodies that are being found?
Yes, the people are afraid to come forward and talk about when family members have disappeared or students have disappeared. And in the wake of this, in the aftermath, we started hearing about, other towns where 30 students had been disappeared. And going back to one thing you had said, I spoke with one of the survivors of the attack. His name is Omar Garcia. And Omar told me that the soldiers said, give us your name, give us your real name, because when they find you, you're going to want to be identified.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
So what did Omar do? What did he say to them?
He gave them his real name. But Omar at the time was also holding his friend, who was bleeding to death because one of a bullet had gone and mm-hmm. hit the lower part of his face. So one thing that the survivors have said, and this is not, you know, Omar and another survivor, they've said, we are walking dead right now.
Wow.
I remember you told me that because mm-hmm. we were communicating on Facebook and you had just talked to him. So have you heard from him since? Do you know if he's safe?
No, I don't know if he's safe. I think probably security and safety is an ongoing mm-hmm. concern for him. I met him in Mexico City. He was there because of, you know, he has family members there. He was hoping to have some modicum of security. But when I spoke with him, he was on the phone every 2 or 3 minutes making mm-hmm. contact to say, I'm still here. Wow.
Well, we're going to take a break here right now. I'm Jim Hutchings with Crystal Giesbrecht on Human Rights Radio, and we're talking with Bridget Keating about her research in Mexico. We'll be right back after the break with some music that Bridget has picked for us, and she'll tell us all about it after the music, so we'll be right back.
Tapame con tu rebozo llorona porque me muero de frío. Las flores llorona, las flores del campo santo. No sé qué tienen las flores llorona, las flores del campo santo. Que cuando las mueve el viento llorona parece están llorando, que cuando las mueve el viento llorona parece que están llorando. Ay, de mi llorona, 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 llévame al río. Ay, de mi llorona, 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 llévame al río. Tápame con tu rebozo, llorona, porque me muero de frío. Tápame con tu rebozo, llorona, porque me muero de frío. Es una mujer llorona y por eso el sol de España. La luna es una mujer llorona y por eso el sol de España. Anda que bebe los montes llorona porque la luna lo engaña. Anda que bebe los montes llorona porque la luna la engaña. Ay, de mi llorona, 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 de un campo lirio. Ay, de mi llorona, 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 de un campo lirio. El que no sabe de amores, llorona, no sabe lo que es martirio. El que no sabe de amores, llorona, no sabe lo que es martirio. Thank you. te soñaba dormida, llorona dormida, te estabas quieta. Yo te soñaba dormida, llorona dormida, te estabas quieta. Pero en llegando el olvido, llorona, soñé que estabas despierta. Pero en llegando el olvido, llorona, soñé que estabas despierta. Sí, porque te quiero, quieres, llorona, quieres que te quiera más. Sí, porque te quiero, quieres, llorona, quieres que te quiera más. Si ya te he dado la vida, llorona, ¿qué más quieres? ¿Quieres más?
Wow, a lot of emotion there.
Yeah, that's...
My Spanish is zip, so you're going to have to tell us all about it, Bridget.
That is a Mexican folk song called La Llorona, and it is based on the mythology of La Llorona, which means the weeping woman. Mm. And there are different versions of that story, like any mythology, but in one of the stories, a woman has lost her children, and she